to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Yeah, okay, we're recording. All right, hello, welcome to episode 295 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and my distant pal, Sean Orford. How are you, Sean?
I'm very distant.
We had a bit of a diary issue, didn't we, for tomorrow morning? And well, I did, so I had to rearrange. So we're going to have to... Oh, blimey, there goes my knee. We're going to do one of our Skype ones, which hopefully, well, we're coming through loud and clear. You've got a neighbour who... I believe, Sean.
They're doing something next door, yeah.
Right, so let's hope it's kitchen installation and not like...
You've got pneumatic woodpeckers on the walls.
So. Yeah. We're talking about dependency this week. How dependent we are on people around us, on society, on systems as a whole. There's been some interesting discussions going on in the news recently about the dreaded Brexit and, well, kind of how we're going to be affected potentially with terms of like food supply and medical supplies. All the scary stuff, but we're getting close to crunch time, aren't we? So,
We'll
talk about that shortly, but liveinthepresent.co.uk. All the show notes and links on our website. All the previous episodes are on there as well. Do take a look at them and do sign up to our mailing list for free meditation files, for a discount code for the book, and weekly alerts for the show as well. How are you doing, Sean? What have you been up to?
Very good. It's party week this week because Ree and her mum are both dancers and dance teachers.
Really?
So that... So that we have this bond with Strictly Come Dancing, which comes to town every year in Liverpool. So we go and do that. And classically, they're all looking at the dancing, and I'm looking at the band, because the band is amazing. Yeah. They are an incredible band. They are so tight. Really good. Singers are incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing watching. So, I mean, I like a bit of Strictly on the telly, and... I think a bit more credit should be given to the music. I mean, the professional
are amazing,
but like not putting a foot wrong. But the musicians as well. It's pretty cool operation that.
Yeah, it's good.
So you're doing that tonight, are you? Because I think my in-laws are going to see Strictly in Liverpool.
Tonight. Yeah, it's a tonight issue. Yeah, so that'd be wild.
But fingers crossed for the weather, because I've just been in Liverpool myself for a meeting, and it was raining cats and dogs, and I think there's a bit of snow on the way for certain parts of the country today.
Yeah, they're saying they could be quite heavy, aren't they? I mean, if the rain that was raining now turned into snow, we'd all disappear at the moment.
We would all disappear back into our holes.
And
if it kept on snowing, we'd be a bit screwed because our road network would come grind to a halt.
It's almost the wrong kind of snow, isn't it?
Delivered, etc. I mean, it happened last week, actually, didn't it? Where we had a bit of snow overnight, which kind of froze into ice, and it was a bit more than expected, and things ground to a halt. One local school closed for some reason, but I mean...
It's just a good excuse, isn't it?
Just fun and games out there on the roads. So that's a good little example, I guess, last week in the weather, that how fragile our systems are, really, to potential chaos.
I can remember years ago in Devon, long, long time ago, that the... we were snowed in a horrendous way, and they had to bring snow ploughs in from Europe to clear the roads.
Really?
And that's an interesting dependence on Europe I didn't realise that we had, actually. But I wonder whether we could clear our roads again now.
I know. Well, we might find out in the coming weeks, and beyond that, next year we might find out whether Europe are willing to help us or not.
Sorry, you don't belong anymore. Bye.
I mean, I don't want to get fixated too much on Brexit again, being very sensitive to our listeners' varying political persuasions, etc. But as the dreaded no deal possibility looms large in 2 months, it's still on the table. It's still, in fact, the only certain outcome, unless something is done, you know, unless something else is put in place before then. People are starting to think about, a little bit too late if you ask me, but food supplies, kind of how we get things shipped across, how reliant we are on our trade with our closest allies across the water there. And a lot of people saying it'll be okay, it'll be fine, it'll sort itself out. But then there's, I think it was yesterday, the big chain of, or a big group of supermarkets released a letter and sent to the government in terms of, you know, no deal's going to dramatically affect food supplies, guys. You might want to sort something out. So only got the usual kind of Remainers like myself going, ah, shit, what the hell? And then all the hardcore leavers saying, ah, it's just scarce, Gemmerungen, we'll be fine, we'll be fine. So what do you make of it, Sean?
Well, when I suggested that we did one on this, it came about because in one of the hospital departments I was in, they had run out of tissues, and the issue was, didn't know when the next lot of tissues would arrive. And the staff group were talking about tissues, and then one was saying, what would happen if there were no tissues in the shop? And that tumbled from tissues into cosmetics and sanitary products in general, that they were obsessed with that. Mm-hmm. And then it slipped through, eventually, it got as far as food. And it had never occurred to me that we should be thinking about stockpiling food. And I hadn't realised until I spoke to you that you had already been stockpiling food. So the big question that came up in the conversation with the team was, OK, if you're going to stockpile, what do you stockpile? And then there were all kinds of conversations about, which kind of got into diet a bit, I guess, is because the people that wanted steak every night and all that kind of stuff, unless you could freeze it and the freezer kept going, then you'd be in a mess. And, you know, for me, because I'm more of kind of veggie head on, to have things like beans and rice and stuff like that would be okay. I'd need the stuff to make sauces or sauces in jars or something.
Yep.
And of course, fresh vegetables, they would potentially be out the window. They reckon that over 40% of all the fresh veggies that we use comes from abroad.
Mm-hmm.
So, and yeah, probably in the winter more than that, I would think.
Yeah, so, well, my little story I'll tell quickly. My wife didn't even believe me when she found out that I'd been starting to put bits aside. There's a journalist called, a freelance journalist called James Patrick.
Yeah.
He's actually a former police officer, and he kind of blew the whistle on some crime statistics in the Met police probably 4 or 5 years ago, and he was booted out of his job then, and now he's a freelance journalist. And I've been following him online for a while.
Right.
Pretty much straight after the vote, he was kind of putting up warning signs about kind of the legality of the vote and how it had been paid for, and how not just the kind of Russian aspect, which kind of gets mentioned a lot, but kind of hostile folks within our own country that had funded certain aspects of it illegally, and, you know, used Facebook and Twitter to kind of seed pretty horrible ideas about the EU. So I've been following it along, and about a year ago he'd mapped out this plan for where we were headed with negotiations and all that, and he was saying that, look, no deal is the only likely, or is the most likely outcome from all this, and he kind of plotted ahead, and a lot of people laughed at him and said, rubbish, rubbish. But as he's got closer and closer to March 29th, everything he's been saying has been proved, like, remarkably accurate, like crazy.
Yeah.
How close he is. And about 6 months ago, he put out a web page and a leaflet called Getting Ready Together. And it was kind of a list of things that you should be doing in preparation for no deal. And one of them was stockpiling food and getting ready for... And it started to freak me out a bit. And I have been stockpiling... I don't know if that's the right word. I've been putting aside some dried food and purchasing a bit extra each week in our weekly shop. So, like, dried pasta and rice. And then we'll come on to, like, how we'll need actually, like, fresh water to cook those. But, like, tin stuff, like beans, baked beans, mixed beans, some tin sweet corn and some tin fruit. So I've got quite a sizable chunk of food there to keep us going, which, I'm reasonably confident we won't need for the reasons I thought we might. But it's best to be prepared, isn't it? And then the wider issue about all this stuff is how dependent we are on other people and other organisations to keep us alive, like, every single day. And right now, you and I are talking over this electric network of communication, which could quite easily drop out at any point if someone pushed the wrong button, or if some if it wasn't being powered by enough electricity. So I've never actually experienced any major power loss. Like, apparently, was it in the 70s in the UK? It was a quite a regular,
regular 3-day week thing, didn't it? And then,
So my generation's never had any real experience of that. You know, apart from obviously there are less well-off people that struggle on a day-to-day basis to making ends meet. But in terms of like society-wide shutdowns of things, I've never experienced anything like that. So, have you?
Yeah. I've been in power cuts. When I had the farm up in Wales, the power would go out sometimes.
Yeah, so when you had the farm, were you kind of self-sufficient to a point, or could you have been?
Yeah. Yeah, what I did was each year, the water came from a bar hole anyway, so that was out. The fuel that used to run the farm, I used to buy in a year's supply every year at the beginning of the winter. So there was enough to take us right the way through.
Mm-hmm.
And there was lots of food there because at least all the animals on the farm. I was eating meat at the time, so.
Yeah, well, I mean, so, yeah, it got me thinking a lot. So the things I've been buying that we might need, I was thinking, oh, what if the water supply goes? Okay, I won't be able to cook me rice anymore unless I've got some kind of system for collecting rainwater, which we don't at the moment, actually. We had a water butt for a while, but it split and we didn't replace it. So maybe I should have thought about that. But yeah, like, you wouldn't be able to use your oven, your microwave. We've got a wood-burning stove in the house that was there when we moved in, so that would probably come in quite handy.
Yeah.
For heat and for cooking as well. So, but yeah, it just gets you thinking about how reliant we are on other people to do certain things so that we can have our nice, comfy lives. It's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And we take it so much for granted that those people say, oh, don't worry about it, it's no problem, we're all right.
Yeah.
We don't know whether that's real, do we? And we're only going to know in the process of time as to whether it is okay or not.
Yeah, I saw a little snippet on the news last night where they were going around some market in London asking people their thoughts on what we should do and what direction we need to take and what if no deal would be all right, etc. And it was the usual stuff, like some people were saying, shocking, don't do it, we need a people's vote, and then a few people saying, we'll be fine. But one of the guys really struck me, a chap, an elderly gent, who was one of the no deal proponents, and he was saying that he was almost wanting a situation where society would be put under like a huge amount of pressure to kind of teach people the value of things. So you kind of said, what did he say? He said, yeah, people need to learn, don't they, what we got. They need to be grateful for it. So that he's kind of he's willing this kind of suffering, which I don't remember that being on the side of any buses or any leaflets I saw. Maybe he's got a point there. You know, maybe...
But do you think that the European community would, they'd never say this openly, but do you think that they would like Britain to suffer as a warning maybe to other states, European states, that might be thinking of doing the same thing?
I've thought about that. It's a really fine balance that they need to take, isn't it? Because, you know, I want the EU to continue and maybe we'll rejoin it one day. But if it was an organisation that was prepared to let people die or suffer to a great extent without stepping in and changing the rules a bit, then maybe that's not something that we want to be a part of. So it's a really fine balance that that politicians on both sides are walking at the moment, because there's a lot of politicians that are just saying to hell with it, you know, we've got nothing to lose. And they're kind of willing this kind of sense of catastrophe. So we're in this kind of just horrendous place where we're in this perfect storm of but we've got to sort it out. We've got 2 months to sort it out, haven't we? So, but do you think the old guy that I mentioned, has he got a point about sometimes can learning only come, and gratitude can only come through suffering? Is that a big stream?
I think that's right, isn't it? I mean, when we were doing the Living the Present courses, the whole issue about the only reason people change is either pain or awareness.
Right.
Other people have a level of awareness that they realise something needs to be done, or it has to become too painful for it to be the way that it is, for them to need change.
Yeah. I guess what all this stuff we're talking about today comes back to is about a sense of gratitude, isn't it? So I'm grateful for this broadband that we're using right now so we can have this chat, and I'm grateful for the electric train that I used this morning when I hopped over to Liverpool to meet a contact over there. And, you know, when I get home, I'll be able to switch the oven on and cook some tea for my family, etc. And I'll turn the tap and on it, out come all this beautiful, clean drinking water.
Yeah.
And we take a lot of this stuff for granted.
We are very rich and very privileged people, but we don't necessarily celebrate that. We're very lucky.
So we might, in the coming months, have reason to celebrate all this stuff if it's put under threat or if... Yeah, I mean, the journalist I follow, he's kind of saying that if we leave a no deal, which is looking quite likely, very likely, 90% chance he's putting it out at the moment, people will die in the UK because of this stuff. And I don't want to add to the kind of induced demand of panic by saying to everyone now, run out, stock up, because, you know, that itself can create yet more panic, can't it? So you're going to start.
But like I said to you earlier, if you look at the supermarkets and you look at people at Christmas or Easter, and they stack their trolleys right to the ceiling because they're terrified of what they're not going. The shops aren't going to be open for one day. what is the concept? It's like we see it in other countries and feel sorry for them, but you have pictures inside supermarkets where there is nothing on the shelves. No, there is no delivery. There is no food.
Yeah, Venezuela at the moment, that's in a bit of a tough place politically. That's all. People are fleeing the country en masse at the moment. And in the UK here, we can't, you know, we have our issues with food banks and poverty for sure, way more than we should do.
But
I haven't seen any of that on my travels to school and to work this morning. You know, it's all been pretty peachy.
Mind you, the weather's so bad, isn't it, that anybody is kind of getting out of it wherever they can at the moment.
But in terms of dealing with vulnerable people as well, which you do, you know, to a varying extent of vulnerability, there are a lot of people that are entirely dependent on others to cook, you know, every meal for them, to kind of get them out of bed in the morning in some cases. That's like Uber dependency, isn't it?
Those kinds of systems are the ones that break down first, because a lot of those people that can't get out of bed will be dependent on medication. And if we do have the kind of Brexit that people are beginning to predict, and we have problems with medication, and it's the issue about medication is that you can't stockpile medication in the same way, because it does have a very serious use-by date.
Yeah.
So you can only take so much so far ahead. And we're already struggling with diabetes and asthma medications as it is, you know, keeping up with demand.
I met with a pal ages ago, but he's a property investment guy, successful guy all around, but certainly financially does very well. He was running me through some of his tips and things he goes through when he's meeting with people, potential investors for the first time that haven't got any kind of portfolio or any kind of financial backup. Some of the things he said he recommends people financially have in place, so that they, if the worst comes to the worst, they have a backup of cash. So he was saying really you should have 6 months worth of salary in savings somewhere, for like rainy day funds in case you lose your job or in case the worst happens or you get ill or injured, that kind of thing. And I wonder how many people in the UK percentage wise have 6 months salary in savings stashed away ready to go. I'm guessing it's probably quite low, but
The last time that I was checking out such things, it was something like the average couple in the UK were holding something approaching £30,000 worth of unsecured debt.
Wow.
On things like credit cards and store cards.
£30,000?
you know, car loans, all that kind of stuff, which is a phenomenal amount of money, especially if suddenly it's okay having cards that are kind of maxed out, but you're having to service that debt, and as soon as you can't service it, what happens next?
Yep. Yeah. Again, it's highlighting how vulnerable we all are, really, isn't it? Or a good percentage of us are to, you know, when that volcano strikes or that hurricane strikes, that, you know, we're not, in the UK, we don't have natural disasters as such. We get the odd flood, maybe. But we don't have any tsunamis sweeping through. But we are still vulnerable to things, aren't we? Financial hits. I mean, we had the big financial hit in 2008. And I think I just saw yesterday online that I think it's Lloyds Bank have just offered their first 100% mortgage for first-time buyers since that era.
Wow.
When finances were going nuts and mortgages were getting dished out for too much and people got into trouble and houses were overvalued, etc. So it's like alarm bells ringing all over again. Like, we've learned nothing.
100% mortgage, wow.
Yeah. And I was lucky enough to take advantage of one of them. I say lucky. When we got our first flat, it was about 95% mortgage. But once, by the time they added on all their sneaky little fees and all that crap, it was almost 100%. And that was right at the peak of just before the storm hit. And that's our flat that we still own. So I'm a reluctant landlord in the sense that we couldn't sell the flat because we'd lost like 30, 40 grand on it or would have. But we were lucky enough to have parents that could just about lend us some money to get a deposit for a house. So we've got two mortgages, whoopee-doo. It's crazy.
You lucky chap.
Yeah. But I saw that yesterday and I was like, oh my word. There's a movie called The Big Short, which came out a few years ago. Got Brad Pitt in it and Christian Bale. It tells the story of the financial collapse in America. You know, Lehman Brothers and all that stuff. Which kind of set things in motion right around the world, and we haven't learned the lessons. So I don't know. We just got kind of greed inbuilt as humans that we just can't resist these deals, these offers.
But it just becomes cyclic. I think we just go from one to the other. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, you're saying about having two mortgages. Actually, to have two mortgages, to be in a position to have two mortgages, has to be pretty good. It may be a pain in the ass, but maybe it's a good pain in the ass, you know.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, we're mega lucky. I mean, it's not been without its stresses in the last 10 years, because we have these gaps where tenants move out and the new ones move in, so you have to pay two mortgages for, you know, a month or two, while you haven't got anyone in the flat and you're trying to get someone in. So it's not without its stresses, and I'd rather not have it around my neck, to be honest. But I'm sure it'll come good at some point. Because house prices, they go up, 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 don't they, man? They just keep going up, 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 and that's the way the world works.
Yeah, but there was a point where they came down, down, down at the end of the 90s.
Yeah.
And that was one hell of a shock for a lot of people.
Mm.
That was tough stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but do we learn more from these shocks than we do from anything else? I'm trying to get a positive spin on what we're talking about today. But
I think that we're at the point of choice. No, a series of things are going to happen now.
Mm.
It's up to us what we do with those things. You know, do we want to create a world of cooperation and people looking after each other, or are we going to create a world which is a pain in the backside?
Yeah.
And that's the choice that we've got, and we're right on that choice now. And I guess that the issue of stockpiling. It's an interesting one because, we need to make sure that our families are fed. We need to look after our people. But are we looking at, you know, if we go in and buy up all the stuff in the shop, what's left for other people that might need it?
Yep. You know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, don't go too nuts. So that we get a full tank of petrol in your car as well, just in case. And buy a bicycle.
Yeah.
If you haven't got one already.
I've done it. I've got one.
Good lad. Yeah.
You're going to be able to charge it. The thing is, mine's electric. How am I going to charge it?
Can you charge it as you pedal it?
No. It should do that, shouldn't it? It doesn't do that.
It'd be quite cool, yeah, if you had an electric bike that you charge when you got home. You could take it in and, like, put it on a dynamo and watch telly while you're charging it up for your next day, so you get double the miles in. That'd be quite good, wouldn't it?
What about if it works so that when you put the brake on, it went into charge mode, or if you were going downhill, it started charging?
Yeah, most electric cars do that, don't they? So I think you need a lot of energy to make any kind of difference, but there you go. When we come out of this crash and this shock, and like everyone starts coming out of their caves again, that could be your first big project, Sean.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
What are you going to be stockpiling then? What are you going to be getting in your cupboard in the next few weeks? Calmly, without wanting to panic anyone, of course. Any tips?
I think that the kind of things I want to make sure that we've got are stuff like we've got enough of the right flour and enough of the right materials to make bread.
Mm-hmm.
Because bread is the staff of life, and we happily make our own bread here. So if we could make sure we can do that, then bread and some other bits and pieces. You'd always make a good soup, can't you? That's the thing. You've got to have the bread to give it the soup.
If you need any wood, there's plenty of logs in our woods in our back garden. So cycle around with your trailer on the back of your bike and off you go back to.
I'll be there, yeah.
Yeah.
So are you, I mean, as you've identified, you've actually consciously thought, okay, I need to stockpile some stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
Are you happy with what you've got, or do you feel like you...
I think so. I've been shoving it away without really looking at what we've got overall, so it might be quite interesting. By the way, my wife, Bethan, didn't even believe that I had this on the go. We were chatting with family one day a few months ago about it. Because I think there had been a news report about potential disruption to food supplies, and I kind of dropped in. Oh, I've been getting stuff ready, and Bethan didn't believe me. You haven't. He's joking. You haven't been doing that. You haven't. And we went home, and she looked, and she saw it, and she sent a photo in the little WhatsApp group we have. And, look, it's here. So, I don't know if the rest of the family have been taking it into their own hands, but she didn't believe me, but. I'm serious about this stuff, man. These are serious times, aren't they?
Yeah. And that's the point, isn't it? So I don't know where this goes next from here, but there is going to be, in all likelihood, levels of shortage. And I guess each of us, it will be down to what we've managed to do to look after ourselves and ours and our loved ones, I guess.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, at some point this podcast may not be available. You never know. But best of luck to everyone out there. That's been a nice cheery episode, hasn't it?
Yeah, right. Yeah, miserable buggers. Yeah.
all right. Have you got a resource, Sean? What's something you want to mention?
No, I think the resource has to be that what everybody needs to do from here is go and have a look in their cupboard. And just have a think about it. You know, if you couldn't get any food in for a week or two, have you got enough food in your cupboard to feed your family? And if no, what would you need to put in your cupboard that wouldn't be perishable, would be usable over time?
Yeah.
So that you can actually make sure that everyone is okay. You know, mm-hmm. I think that is a reality.
Yeah. I mean, regardless of politics at the moment, I think...
Yeah.
Just go have a look at what, just imagine, I don't know, some kind of natural disaster struck.
Yeah.
Let's say there was some kind of terrorist incident where ports and motorways and rail lines were all obstructed all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Because our systems are relatively brittle, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. So what is it that you would do?
Mm.
You know, and that is a very real thing. And I hadn't really thought about it before everybody started worrying about their sanitary products, which was where the big panic was. But I get it, you know. And I suppose I've been guilty of that feeling of, no, we're okay. We're kind of, I know it's a bit odd, but we're kind of Europeans and it'll be okay. You know, but maybe we're not. Maybe we're not okay. Maybe Europe turns around and says, well, tough on you guys.
Yeah.
You know, you chose to do this. Get on with it.
I'll put a link into The Big Short, which is a movie about the financial crash, which is it's funny, but very informative movie from a few years ago. So I'll stick the link in for that. I think it's on Netflix at the moment, so you can get it quite easily.
Right.
So, yeah, it's you can watch it as long as there's a decent electricity supply and a broadband supply, so get it while you can.
Yeah. And after that, you've had it.
You've had it, you're stuffed. Right, Sean, have a good week.
And you take care.
See you next
happy.
Time, mate.
Okay.
See you guys.
See you now. Bye.
Bye.